everyone. This is week three of our Meet a Maker series, and this week we are joined by the wonderful Aura. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how about you?
Good. Just a quick note on this week, we don't have lovely Faye with us just because timing was a little tricky, but we will have her on in future episodes for surely. It's a bit tricky when Faye's in the UK and I'm in Australia and we're trying to talk to Americans. It's just like, oh, sometimes yeah, it doesn't quite work. timing is hard.
Timing is...
But yeah, let's talk about you. What do you do, Aura? What sort of projects are you known for?
Dolls?
Dolls.
Yeah. So I make I basically do what a lot of the people who get into 3D printing is props, cosplay props, but I'm effectively doing it on a much smaller scale.
You have a shoulder munchkin.
Yes, yeah, I have a show. Go, please. Okay. Here, try that. And go, thank you, sorry. yeah, I effectively make really small props for dolls instead of full. I also print the dolls. And it's all centered around a hobby, which is the Asian, originally started as the Asian ball-jointed doll hobby. There's so many more dolls now that are not based out of Asian-created communities. There's European ones, there's UK-based, France, I know there's a couple in the Middle East. There are people in Australia making dolls. There's people in the U.S., Canada, all over. In fact, I think we even have, I think we have somebody in Alaska in the doll community. Wow. That makes dolls. So there's people everywhere making dolls, and they can range from itty bitty down to somebody actually made a 1:1 scale, which is human size. Yeah.
Wow.
Those aren't the common ones. The common sizes are 1/4 scale, 1/3 scale, and 1/2 scale.
Gotcha. yeah, well, I have like delved on a, you know, sort of like an ADHD train to kind of like, you know, when you just get stuck into a topic. I've done that with dolls a few times just because there's so much artisanship that goes into the construction of them. Like, they're just astounding, and like in terms of miniature making, like they are top tier. Like the things that you, that the community pulls off, are just incredible. And
yeah,
blow my mind.
There are people that make these itty bitty, like there you can get small dolls that are considered, like I have my pumpkin pet doll and he's small scale, but there are people who make humans that are like, and they have like individual fingers, and I mean, I work in small scale, don't get me wrong, but then there's these people and I'm like, how do you still have eyeballs?
Yeah.
Like, how are you not blind yet?
Do you do it under a microscope?
Like... yeah, because even me, like when I'm painting some of these smaller dolls, I have a lit magnifying glass that I paint looking through, because I mean, I already have to wear glasses, so I want to retain what I have, and there's these people that craft these teeny tiny little things, so it's like, but
yeah.
That's the benefit of the 3D, is I can sculpt it big and then print it really tiny, so, which is why I kind of started doing this, because it was on top of, we were, at the time, we were prototyping stuff, it's just getting obscenely expensive, so my husband was like, we should get our 3D printer and just do this ourselves, because it's going to pay off. And so we got our first Prusa. It was actually Mark II, original Mark II.
Nice.
And here. Go away. it just kind of blew up from there.
So the dolls brought you into printing. You were already doing the dolls, and you.
I mean, it brought me into printing. My husband was using it as an excuse to just get a 3D printer because he wanted to be able to make stuff. I mean, we have a water capture system that has all of its valves and stuff that are made from 3D printing, and all of our toothbrush holders, and we replaced baby gate fittings when we moved. I mean, we basically did what every other person who got a 3D printer as a hobby thing. We replaced stuff around the house, but I was like, I can make stuff with this that interests me beyond functional items, and it blew up from there. I mean, we got our first one in 2014. It was right after our daughter was born. Like, we ordered it before she was born, because this was back when it was, you know, 6 month wait times for the Prusas. We ordered it before she was born, and it showed up, I want to say, like, months after she was born. Yeah. So we're going on 5 years now printing, and we have 8 machines.
Huh, awesome.
So 3 of them are resin printers. It snowballed a lot faster than I thought it would, and I didn't ever think that I'd turn it into a business, and it is. And sometimes I sit down and I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah, it must be terrifying at times. Like, I don't know, only just dabbling in the making for myself thing at the moment. And yeah, it's so like, is this real? Like, will this work? Yeah.
But
clearly
exactly.
You have it working. So like, what was that journey like? Like, how did you get to be making money from your printing?
So I started just making a few things for my own dolls, and the doll community is very centered around photography and taking pictures of the dolls. So I was making props for my dolls to use in photographs, and people were showing an interest in them, and it was, can I buy this? And it was, well, I mean, yeah, I could print you one. And then it was, well, how much does it cost? And then I had to sit down and figure out, you know, price per, you know, gram of filament or whatever, and all of that. And then my husband was like, you know, you could probably just do this. And I was like, yeah, do I really want to, though? And then I realized that, yeah, actually, I do really want to. I'm enjoying this. So I figured out a business name and got all that situated and done and everything. And I put out my first pair of horns in 2016. I'd have to actually go look at my Instagram to see the date, but I put
close
the first,
enough.
Yeah. I'm wearing 20. I think it was 2016. First pair of horns out in 2016. I did a test print on at the time it was our Mark IIs, and we just got our first Moai in, and I was like, I'm gonna print this in resin, and I printed it in resin, and I was like,
oh my
I can
God.
Just print these in resin. Yeah. I don't even need to prototype these things anymore. Let's just print them. Just print them as fast as I can. And I have like 28 horn designs now, and I have a whole bunch that I haven't released yet, and I have all this other stuff, and it's like, you can make dolls with this too. Because at the time, there wasn't really a whole lot of people 3D printing dolls. In fact, when I started, there weren't really a whole lot of people 3D printing, period, for the doll community.
Yeah,
there were a couple of the larger companies that were there were a couple of the larger companies that had invested in printing to replicate some of their more common items for casting purposes, but in terms of the single artist and smaller companies, 1-2 people, things like that, everybody was still doing it by hand. And the vast majority are still doing it by hand, where you take clay or some other physical medium, make your master, and then you invest that into a mold and then cast in resin from there. Now we have people who are just straight printing and selling the printed dolls. And I'm one of them. I don't think I was the first, but I was probably one of the first to do it. I know I'm the first one printing in glitter because I thought I thought Form Labs had actually put out a glitter print, glitter resin. And I went recently back and looked at their page. That was an April Fool's joke back in 2014.
Oh, wow.
If you look at the release date, it's April 1st. And if you look at the prints, they're just prints that have been rolled in glitter. They're not actually. And I thought they were actually glitter prints. So, and I had looked to see if anybody had printed in glitter, and I found their page, and I was like, oh, okay, cool, it's possible. So I started printing in glitter.
I love
it. Nobody had printed in glitter at that point, as far as I could. Yeah, I couldn't find anything else other than their page. So as far as I know,
you were the first to print in glitter?
I was the first one, unless somebody had done it and not documented and posted about it. But as far as documented, I was the first one to do it.
That's awesome, because it's one of my favorite techniques. Like, and I picked it up from a random post on Reddit, which I don't think was yours. It was so not doll related.
Yeah, I'm not even on Reddit. So yeah. It wasn't
mine. Yeah, and so I picked it up from there, and then I know other people have picked it up from me. So, you know, that's so cool that you started it, because it's one of my favorite techniques. Like, I love it. Like,
it's super fun. I wish it was easier to do. I wish it had more consistent results, because what I was going for was poured, like you see with people who do the poured resin, they put glitter in it and it's all crazy and everything. And that's what I wanted to do. And obviously I knew I couldn't do the big chunks because you're dealing with layers and it would never work. So I was like, well, let me small scale this like I do with everything and see if we can get at least something close to, It's super fun. You never get a print that is the same looks-wise because of the way the glitter works and the way it prints. But it is challenging, and there's a lot of failures. Like, that's the one thing when people are like, oh, you can just throw glitter at it. I'm like, no. No. I'm like, you can, but it's not going to work. I wish it was more consistent. I wish it had kind of an easier approachability. But it's fun. It gives you interesting, really unique looking prints, and I'd say it's the answer to all the fancy filaments that are out there.
Yeah,
because it's like you have, you know, all the rainbow looks and everything and
silks and stuff.
You have you have got all these really cool filaments, and I'm like, there's nothing like that in the resin world. Why don't we have cool pretty toys? So
it is easier to customize our colors in the resin world, thankfully.
I have a shelf stacked with different colored dyed resins that I've made for various projects and stuff, and that was you know, in all honesty, the dyeing should have been my first experiment and it wasn't. It was just, let me dump glitter into it and see if it works.
I think,
and
that was the same for me too. The glitter thing is so cool, but I get you about the difficult. Like, it'd be cool if a lot more printers had a stir bar to kind of keep the resin moving. Like, that would be so helpful. But like, the stuff you come out with is amazing. Like, I remember you had a doll torso that just looks like she's got galaxies inside her. Like, it looks. Is she there? Oh, so beautiful.
Part of her is
so beautiful. Like, I was just drooling all over. Not,
I don't think that exact one is, but this is the current one, and I don't think her butt's gonna show up on screen. But so she's got cool. This one's got a blue interference mica powder in her. Are those won't? Will this? Maybe.
Not quite, but I'll get some gifts or something from you, and we'll overlay it for the for the real video.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're just so stunning.
Yeah, it's a super neat effect. It's almost this cat eye, like if you've ever seen the little bead, the cat eye beads. It's almost got that effect where you see it from different angles.
That's exactly it. And the like something about the process makes it, yeah, like plainer. Like yeah. I really like that because it's almost like opal. Like I did a simulated opal yes. pretty early on. And like opal has like layers of interference, but they're not like random scattered there. Yeah. So it's really good imitating that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's just gorgeous. Such a cool technique.
Yeah. It's really, really pretty. And I've experimented with large. In fact, my first glitter print had larger chunk in it. It was the we call it unicorn flake. It's these like mylar chunks of rainbow opalescent stuff. I printed with that, and you can print with it. But what happens is when you print your layer, if there's a piece like this is your part layer, if there's a piece of glitter that gets cured into that layer and it's sticking out, you have this chunk of glitter sticking out, so you have to go through and clip it and sand it.
Yeah,
and it works if you intend to fully sand the part, which a lot of mine I end up doing anyway, but it doesn't seem. Now this is all, of course, this is on a laser based machine. I've used really fine particle and mica powder in our DLP, which is a phenom, but I haven't used chunk glitter in the screen-based machines yet, so
it's
I don't
the same
know
on a screen.
If it'll work.
Yeah,
it is okay.
Yeah,
I was gonna say I don't want anybody to go out there and do it and then be like, "You broke my machine," because I haven't tried it. I've only tried it on the laser-based machines.
Yeah, so, I used a photon, so yeah, it's the same thing.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I know there's a couple people out there that have tried it in the DLP machines, and it seems to work pretty well. But yeah, the stirring is. That's the one blessing of the Moai. It does that tilt function, which causes it to suck and pull back in. And in the ones that don't, they just it eventually all settles to the bottom. And that's also the other thing is the DLP formulated resin tend to be a lot less viscous than the laser based formulated ones. They're in fact, we've got one of my favorite brands is Sorayatech. They're clear, which is what I use as a lot of a base. It's basically water, so yeah. Nothing sticks. Nothing sticks in the suspension. It just directly into the bottom.
Yeah, and I find the like particle size or the density of the glitter matters because I once tried gold leaf. I was like, oh well, glitter works. Let's try gold leaf. Yeah, no, it's just like you get like two layers of gold leaf and then just the rest is resin, which kind of looks cool, but yeah, it's not really what I was
going
for. Yeah,
not what you want, especially when those first two layers are usually your raft and your support, and it's like, well, this sucks.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I wish I still had it. I don't have the box anymore. I had a box of all of my resin tests for glitter printing, like getting the orientation right, because orientation of your part matters depending on how you want to view the glitter and laser settings and all this. And it was just like you had where it was like glitter for the first half and then nothing.
Yeah.
So you had these like half and half stuff and
yeah.
And then I had ones where there was no glitter on the part at all, and it was all on the raft and the support. And I'm like, well, those are really pretty supports, but that's not what I wanted.
Yeah.
So, but I've got it pretty wired down now. I can, for the most part, get just about any look that I want. My biggest hunt is finding new glitter that I can use that'll work in it, because everybody keeps saying, oh, this is ultra fine glitter, and it's really not. It's, you know, it's the stuff that you would use as makeup or whatever, and I want the almost mica powder size particles, because I have mica powder. I can, you know, you can get mica powder for days. I want actual glitter pieces that are ultra small, and there's a couple companies out there that carry it, but it's usually like one or two colors, and that's it. They don't have a whole lot of options.
Yeah, so and then trying to get the interference is always like and the interference is like, right. The best one. All glitter should be interference. Yes. I don't even know why they make exactly. The boring kind.
Yeah. Like, I don't want one color. I want it to be 12.
Yes, please. Come just on. Why do you even make 12. The boring ones? I don't understand. And why are they more popular? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing I did notice that works on the same kind of vein as Gold Leaf is the chroma powder for nail art.
Yes, that's what. Yes, I was using similar. Yeah, except how
yeah, the
chroma.
Little chameleon, the chameleon flake powders and the chroma flakes where they're flaky and you're supposed to buff them to get that. Those will actually work because they're light enough that they'll stay in suspension for the most part. Again, it all comes down to your resin viscosity. If you're dumping water in there, nothing's gonna stay in suspension.
That's what I use for my opal, I think. Those like unicorn flake
yeah.
things. Yeah.
Yeah, and it looks really neat because you do get these like you get these almost occlusions like you would have in a real stone. Like the this one that I have, I modeled her after rose quartz, and she's got it wasn't intentional. But I should have done it. She's got these little, like bits of black from a previous resin batch in there, and they look like little inclusions in her. So she looks like a real stone.
That is so cool.
Which is really neat. But I've done it intentionally before with the flakes, the mica flakes, or not the mica flakes, but the chameleon flakes.
Yep.
To make little occlusion bits inside that. You know, so yeah, there's a lot of fun things you can do with the glitter and the dye and the mica powders and all that. And it is a neat effect. It's definitely, you do have to do a lot of post-processing though, if you want it to show up, because as we all know, resin likes fog once it's been clean. so you lose a lot of that shimmer and shine, that you get when it's wet, but man, they look gorgeous when they first come out of the printer. They're yep. just, it's like, oh, I've printed stone.
Yeah, it is. Like the first, like when I pulled yeah. my first opal off, because it was like a total, like just like me just trying stuff. I mixed some white and some clear and the dumped the flakes in and just went, looks opalish, give it a go. And I pulled it out and I was like, it looks more like a real opal than like the fake opals that you get in shops.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. This is what? I was like blown yeah. away. And then you put a clear coat over it and it's like, oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so I remember, yeah, I've had the same moment. It's amazing.
Yeah, that was pretty much when I got the first successful print. It was this blue cat eye effect and I rotated and I was like, I did it.
Yeah.
Now I just have to replicate it.
Yeah, now I gotta do it again. the yeah. hardest part. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, oh, sorry. No, continue.
No. You're good.
Yeah. Would you call that probably your favorite technique then, the glitter and the resin thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It's for sure. Like I have of those little the doll that I was showing. I've got probably 5 or 6 bodies in various stages of sitting on my desk, and they're all different colors and they're all different glitter. And,
awesome. Love it.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, continue.
No. I love just dumping, even though my husband hates it, because it gets everywhere.
Mine too.
I'm like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
He calls it the herpes of craft.
It is. It really is. It's everywhere and you can't get rid of it. And yeah. you're 6 months from now, even if you haven't touched a single piece of glitter, you'll find it because it's everywhere.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure both of the inside of our moais are just coated with a fine layer of glitter at this point. So
what can you do?
Well, yeah, what are you gonna do?
It just makes my life more fabulous. Like, are we really complaining? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so you talked a little bit about, well, you seem to be the first person to have done glitter printing, and you said that, yeah, you Googled it originally and found the Form Labs one. So what inspired the initial, like, what inspires you, I suppose, is a general question, but like, where did that spark come from? Where do your sparks come from?
Well, I've got a friend that does, she makes dolls, and she does poured cast, where mm-hmm. she's taking a polyurethane resin, and she basically just takes anything around that she can find. She's got little cabochons and stuff, and she just crams the molds full of those and glitter and color, and then cast the dolls, and they come out, and they're just totally unique. And I was like, I want to be able to print something like that. So, yeah. Tried the glitter, and then realized that it would work, and kind of just started figuring out what I could print that would benefit from glitter, and went from there. Mm-hmm. And that's how the little dolls... The little doll was actually a test. She was supposed to be a prototype of a bigger version. And people, like, were like, but I want to buy it at that size. And I was like, well, she's not supposed to be at that size, but... And I didn't want to just sell her as, like, a white or a gray or whatever. So I was like, I could probably glitter this. And it took a couple of attempts to get the part orientation right to figure out. Because normally you would, like, this is how I print it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's the torso's like this. Normally I would print it so that the torso was like this with the supports from the bottom.
Yeah.
But then you just get glitter on that because all the way the layers built, like you'd have to look straight down at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it took me a couple of tests to get the orientation of the various parts the way I wanted them so that you could view it from the front. Or the back. But after that, it was just like, you know, rapid fire print as many. I think the first batch that I did, I printed 7 or 8 of them. And that galaxy one that where her whole, yeah, she was one of the first ones we did. I actually broke our vat printing her.
What?
Yeah. Well, I used to use PDMS vat. The acrylic with the PDMS layer, glitter's pretty destructive on those vats. Basically, once glitter has gotten into those, that's it. You can't reuse that vat. Good luck resurfacing that vat. You're never gonna get it. We use the FEP vats now.
Just the film, yeah.
I think it's an aluminum one, so I can dump isopropyl alcohol in it. It doesn't care with the acrylic-based vats, it would fog, which is why you couldn't clean them, because I couldn't get anything strong enough to rip all the glitter and the resin out that wouldn't screw up the acrylic.
Yeah, I didn't now realize with the that. Yeah.
Yeah, now with the FEP vat that's aluminum, I can, you know, dump whatever and it doesn't care.
Yeah, you can just rinse
as long
it
as it doesn't. Yeah, as long as it doesn't eat the FEP, it's fine. Mm-hmm. So they're a lot easier to clean out, and it's a lot easier to change. Because that was the other thing I had to kind of factor in, was like, I'm also trying to run a business where I print practical parts for people, so I can't contaminate every single one of my vats with glitter.
Yes, I guess.
Which was, yeah, as much as I don't mind, my clients might.
Yes, some people have very strong opinions about glitter.
Yeah, so... That kind of solved one of our issues of glitter being in everything. But, it was definitely once I figured out I could do it, I started looking for and just straight out making things that I could apply the glitter method to, with the intent that, yes, it would be printed in glitter and, you know, sculpting it so that it could be oriented in such a way that it would benefit most from having glitter shown at a specific angle. And for the glitter parts, you do kind of have to plan it out a little bit. I mean, you can take any part and print it, but if you can plan for it, it's a lot better. So I will specifically plan for things to be glitter printed and build them in such a way, or set them up in a way that they kind of work for it better than if I had just, you know, built it normally with normal printing.
Mm-hmm.
Like your poster that you have all the printing tips and tricks things. I break like half of those rules on it every time I glitter
print. That's only meant for FDM anyway. Resin's a whole different beast. Like you lay a line.
There's some carryover. Some of them,
I mean the overhangs and stuff, and yeah, but layer lines are like not as important in most resin printing, though they are in glitter printing for the optical kind of effect. But yeah, I need to do a resin one, I think. But
And just put an asterisk by, if you're glitter printing, ignore this.
Yes. See poster A. Yeah. But only half of it. Yeah, anyway. Yeah. So, like, workflow-wise, you were talking about how, yeah, you take each little, you sort of, like, take into account the end goal throughout the whole process. Is that what you normally do with all your kinds of things? Or, yeah, what is your workflow like, I suppose?
Yeah, if I'm sculpting something from scratch, obviously I'm always going to take into account that it needs to be 3D printed, so I'm not going to, like, sculpt all this crazy detail on, you know, the back where I'm going to run supports and just leave it that way. I'll probably separate it off into a different piece that I can support in a less vital area. So it's, you know, just always keeping those rules, basically, like we were just talking about, keeping those in mind of how am I going to print this, wall thicknesses, things like that, overall part thickness, like, especially with when I'm dealing with the doll stuff, you know, I'm going really small, and thankfully with the lasers I can do that. But if I know it's destined for our larger machine, which is the Phenom, you know, there is a bottom limit as to how small I can go before the voxeling kicks in the detail. So it very much is a, which machine am I going to print this on? How am I going to print this? But I do most of my stuff in ZBrush, so it's...
And you said you used that in a previous life, didn't you, ZBrush, on like a previous
I went to school for computer and video game design and learned all my tools of the trade that I use now, for the most part, in that, and... nothing ever really came of that.
Like everyone who studied video games.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I have a degree for video games. It does nothing.
Yeah.
So, but now it sort of does something. Yeah. It's just not for what it was intended for. It's been repurposed.
Yes.
which I think is like the anthem of the maker community in general, is just repurpose stuff and
100%
make it better. And so I learned except I learned ZBrush back in 2000. I'm gonna date myself here, back in 2004 2005, so, and then I didn't use it for years and years and years. She's used to me doing my monthly doll convention meetings that I'm part of, and she sits and talks to them.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, I used it back in the early 2000s, and then I didn't use it for, you know, 5-6 years, and in the world of software, 5-6 years is a lifetime, and things change rapidly. So I got back into ZBrush, and I was like, oh, what is all this? This is not the program that I learned. So I had to relearn everything, and I'm still relearning everything, because they come out with new stuff, like, monthly. I'm always going on YouTube and watching videos and stuff of other people, even just, like, the time-lapse videos of people sculpting, because they'll do something that I'm doing a different way, and I'm like, oh, that's actually probably easier than the way I'm doing it. It takes less steps, so constantly learning, constantly trying to figure things out, easier ways to do things.
And I suppose, what are some of the struggles you find along the way, like, if any? Is there anything that, like, you find difficult, or have historically found difficult and found solutions for, or, like, yeah, in your process, I suppose?
ZBrush crashing constantly for no reason at all.
Yeah.
Which anyone who's ever used ZBrush will know that it just decides, I don't want to be a program anymore. No, but aside from ZBrush quirks, having prints fail for no reason is probably the biggest struggle, or what seems to be no reason. I mean, there's always a reason why it failed, but you know, you'll do 5 or 6 prints of the same print on the same machine with the same resin. Nothing has changed. And then all of a sudden it'll stop working. And you're like, why?
Yes.
What is going on? And yeah, it's just, I think that's honestly my biggest struggle is it's battling the machines and their quirks and all that. It just, especially when you're running on deadlines, and you're like, I need to get this printed. I have a show to be at. Mm-hmm. Why aren't you printing? That's probably the biggest struggle. Then you just kind of, sometimes I will just shut the machine off and leave it for a while with the parts still in it and just not look at it.
Yeah.
I think and then come
healthy.
Back and be
I
like,
we've all been
yeah,
there.
Yeah. And then just come back and be like, okay, what can I do to solve your problem so you'll work now?
I'm ready for you again. Let's try
this
again.
I don't want to throw you in the street and let you get hit by a car.
Yeah. Generally, I love you.
Yeah.
So we're going to make this work. No, I think everyone who 3D prints has been there at least once. Like, I know I've been there many, many, many times because I didn't come from a very techie background. Like, my background is, like, I love software and stuff, but in terms of hardware, just never really done any of it. And yeah, so I definitely had many moments of, like, just tears, just so much crying.
Yeah.
Of, like,
yeah,
why aren't you working? I don't understand.
I had one of those moments, at our right before our 2016 doll show that I was trying to get product built for, and we had a vat die, and this was back when we only had the one Moai. We didn't have the second one, and we didn't have the Phenom. I had a vat die, and then our FDM machine, one of our presets wasn't working either, and I was like, I just sat on the floor in our lab, and I just sobbed because it was like, I have to leave in 4 days and I don't have, you know, half the product that I wanted done. Aww. And yeah, so I think we've all been there. I think we've all had our breakdown moments in our machine rooms and just, you know, like, can you please just
please
do me a solid here once and work,
please. Yeah.
Die next weekend when I don't need you.
Yeah, and they seem to, like, know when you want something done on a deadline. They, like, know. And they're like, yep, now's when we're breaking. It's happening now. And you're
oh, I need a new laser, by the way. Let me just throw that out there.
Yep.
I know you have stuff to do and it's going to take it 3 weeks to get here, but I need new parts.
Yeah.
Like.
Yep. Yeah.
Come on.
So having multiple machines, I feel like as soon as you get your 3D printer, it's really not long until you get a second 3D printer.
To fix the first one.
Yeah. You need one going, because once you have one, it's like you can't ever not have one again. It's just like, yeah.
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 Yeah. And that's how we ended up with 8.
Yeah. You're not alone. I'm sure most people,
they seem to breed, and it's just, I don't know why.
Oh, where did that come from? Oh. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
No. You're good.
I was just going to say, so in those moments, what do you do? Like, you talked about taking a break. I do that too. Is there anything else that brings you back and allows you to keep trucking? Like, you're obviously still doing it, so.
Yeah. Oh, I like building stuff for the dolls. I like seeing how small I can go. Like, I don't know if you've seen them or not, but the nose rings for the dolls.
Oh my God. They're microscopic. Yeah. Yeah.
And that really was, how small can we go? Cause I think the minimum size on the Moais originally was listed as 0.15 and I was like, can I go smaller than this?
Let's try.
Yeah, and I printed the first nose ring, and it's like, it's just under 0.15.
So cool.
And I remember I showed it I showed it to the Pia Pauly team, and they were like, how? It was like, I just punched numbers into Kira and then told it to print and didn't expect anything to come up on the board. I expected nothing to show up on the board. And
it did. So then.
Yeah, it did. I was like, I'm not entirely sure how I got it to work. I don't know how I coaxed this out of the machine, but you know what? It did it, and I'm not going to ask questions. Because then it probably will stop working. So
I feel like that with all my experiments, too. I'm like, wow, that worked. Like,
yeah.
Cool.
We're just going to keep doing what we're doing and not investigate it further, because then it'll stop. And
yeah, the magical wear off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... But yeah, it's that's it. Even on my worst days where I'm, you know, I'm battling two of the printers or three of the printers or whatever, it's always a matter of I want to come back and see what else I can make, what else I can do.
Yeah, just like playing with it, your sort of passion for it brings it back.
Yeah, there's always something new for me to make. There's always something new for me to design. There's always something for my dolls that I'm like, I need this in doll size.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that's right. I can make it in doll size because I have a 3D printer.
That must be so cool. Like, yeah, especially for dolls too, because, you know, so much of our world is made for humans, and then you can just like, oh, I can have this. Yeah.
Well, and that's like I'd seen the fabric printing that David Shorey was doing, and I was like, I want that for my dolls. So I made it so for my doll. This is actually FDM printed. It's FDM printed in heat form. I just used his. You print it flat over the plastic or over the fabric. And instead of printing basically sections that would be sewn into a dress, because I'm working at such a small scale, I can just print the entire outfit. Yeah. And then just heat form it or whatever to the dolls. So, yeah, a lot of that's honestly, that's a lot of what it is. I see people size stuff and I want it for my dolls. So I just make it smaller. Yeah.
So cool. Yeah.
So that's my main drive, is just I like pretty stuff for my dolls.
Yep.
I can make it, so I make it.
Yeah, and why not? Like, I love it. I think it's so cool. And yeah, there's like so many people out there who do like D&D minis or like superhero stuff, and it's really cool, cuz like a lot of those kinds of skills sort of are what's used to make dolls. I mean, there's other ones as well, obviously, like lots of like wig stuff that gets me going, but it's really interesting because it's such a unique kind of way of using the technology. Like, there's really not that many people in the greater makersphere doing doll stuff, which and you make such beautiful things. Like, I will put pictures up because they're gorgeous. Yeah, it's very cool. Sorry, I'm just fangirling over you.
No, it really is, and that's I think it was the late night the maker call two Fridays ago. They really are, I mean, they're dolls, but they really are akin to the high end figurines, the action figures and stuff. And it does, if you look at the process videos for how they sculpt those the high end figures. It's no different than what people are doing with the dolls, whether it's with traditional media like clay or stone clay, paper clays and things like that, or doing it in digital. It's just they're meant to be jointed. And some of the figures are too. They're jointed, but they're a pin and hinge joint instead of a ball joint. And that's really the only difference, is one uses one style of jointing system and the other one's using another. And then the dolls are also, they're meant to be customized. They do often sell what's called a full set, which is where the doll's fully made up already, has a styled wig, clothing and everything. But a lot of the dolls are bought primarily blank for the end user to customize how they want, paint it how they want, like the wigs.
Yeah.
there's a whole like subset in the community of people who just make wigs. There's
I went down that rabbit hole one day. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so cool. I'm like, oh, mohair? Oh, silk? People, oh, I have silk
people
roving.
Are doing, yeah. People are doing ventilated doll wigs. Ventilated
wow.
doll scale wig. Yeah, that, I mean, I've seen people ventilated wigs and I'm like,
me
how
too.
Do you have the patience?
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting here watching people ventilate doll wigs and I'm just like,
it's like, yeah,
how?
That rabbit hole
yeah.
is like, these people are amazing. Are they a yeah. little crazy? But who cares? They're amazing.
A little bit crazy. Yeah. yeah. But yeah, and that's
so
what I love.
Detailed.
That's
yeah.
what I love about the doll community is it's like, yeah, we're playing with dolls, but we're also wig makers. Mm. We're painters. We're prop makers. We're costume makers. We're shoemakers. We're sculptors. Like, it's this hobby that
matches
kind of
everything.
Yeah, it has all these different little subsets of creativity in it, and you can get people who, you know, in the doll server that I run, we have a woman whose mother makes pottery, people pottery.
Yep.
She was like, hey, mom, I want some doll-sized pottery for my dolls. Well, guess what her mom makes now and makes a lot of money off of? She makes doll-sized pottery. Like,
yep.
It's... You can apply all these other people-sized processes to the doll process, and it's just,
yeah,
you know, it works.
I think that's what I find so appealing about it. I should just dive in, because I've been thinking about it for ages. But yeah, the mixing of all the different skills into one is just, like, such an
yeah.
exciting place for me, because I love doing that naturally, like, using lots of different skills in one thing. And yeah, it's just such a cool... It's such a cool community, like, for
yeah.
that. Yeah.
And that's really what it is, like, this is how I've tried to explain it to some people. The doll is the blank canvas, and you get to apply all of these skills to the doll, depending on what your skill set is. And you don't have to do everything. I know some people who fully, 100%, they do everything from the wig to the shoes. I'm not that talented. There are a few things that I can't
do. You've got
do.
Your niche.
yeah. yeah. So there are a few things that I go pay other people to do when it comes to customizing my dolls. But yeah, I mean, you literally make, you can make everything on the doll. The eyes, the hair, clothing, everything. Mm. There's even people, and I have done this, and I actually have tutorials up on it, how to do acrylic nails for dolls. I mean,
yeah.
it's literally, you can apply every hobby out there to the doll world, and just, you're just downscaling it. Which, that's what drew me into the doll hobby, was I can apply, like, all these other hobbies that I enjoy doing already to one hobby, and just consolidate it down into to this one thing, so... Mm.
And also, you only need tiny amounts of materials, which is nice for my wallet.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah.
Except it's really not,
myself.
Because you end up buying
Yeah, you end up
anyway.
Buying things from other people. But you're supporting artists,
yeah.
so...
yeah.
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, cool. Well,
yeah.
I don't know. What else should we talk about? I don't know, I still have my list of questions because I'm still a noob at interviews. But, like, what are some of your projects that you think should have got more recognition than they had? Are there any?
Oh, God.
Like, ones you really loved, but they deserve a second chance because the internet didn't show them enough love.
there have been horn designs that I personally liked and people have been kind of meh on. And I'm like, but these were really cool. But, again, it comes down to preference. You know, it's... and then there's horn designs that I was kind of meh on that just blew up, and I'm like,
yep.
What?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I wouldn't say there's any project that I personally felt needed more attention. I'm kind of the mindset that, if it gets one like, I succeeded.
Awesome.
So, for me, I put it out there because I use my imager, or not my imager, my Instagram as kind of like a photo album, but I don't expect to get like I didn't expect to get the following that I have on it. I, every day I'm like, why are you people still following me? Like, what?
Because you're awesome.
What did
gosh.
I do? Yeah, what did I do to deserve this? Like, I
made
did
awesome
somebody...
things.
I mean, I think they're awesome, but at the same time, I'm just like, I don't know. I look at it, I think it's awesome, but I don't expect anybody else to. So yeah, there's not really a project that I feel like, I'm like, why didn't you guys appreciate this? You
know, fair enough.
How dare you not appreciate my hard work? There isn't anything, there isn't anything that falls into that category. There's a couple of times where I've designed some stuff and it's blown up and I've been meh about it or vice versa. But those are more, you know, I made something that I liked and then it didn't blow up. And I'm like, well,
I still
like
it.
You know, yeah, I like it. So I don't really care.
Yeah, that's probably a healthy way to go, really.
I
often have things that just take off that I did, you know, randomly in the afternoon, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's really interesting that that other people found that so cool. So I get that.
I've had a lot of those where I've posted stuff and I'm like, oh, you know, one or two people are gonna find this interesting, and then I come back the next day and it's got, you know, several hundred likes and thousands of views, and I'm like, what?
I should have taken a better picture of it. Oh my god, I should have presented
a
better
exactly.
color. Oh my god.
There's been a few of those where I've done stuff for clients, where I've built stuff for clients, and I've taken these really horrible photos of it. I mean, I've taken photos for them, and then I've snapped, like, a quick picture of it, and I've thrown it up, and people are like, oh my god, that's awesome. I'm like, it's, like, the worst lighting ever. The photo's grainy, and I think my kid's picking her nose in the background of it, but sure.
Too
cool.
Real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had little embroidery keycaps that took off. Like,
yes.
Yeah, and, like, that was, like, a weird, dodgy, like, color that I was trying to get rid of, so I just prototyped stuff in it, and it was just, like, old, and it was huge layer height, like, 0.05 mil or something, and that's really big for a resin, and, anyway, it was big layer height and ugly color, and it just took off, and I was like, dang, I should have done a better job.
Right. Yeah. I totally understand that. I've had so many of those, and it's like, oh, this is gonna be, like, people are gonna repost this, and it's gonna be out there, and it's the worst photograph ever, what am I doing?
But, you know, you can't help what people like, and it's nice at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's awesome.
So what's upcoming for you? What's happening in your world in the next weeks, months?
Nothing. the same old, same old. Normally we would have just come back from Resin Rose, which is a doll convention I'm actually on staff for in Oregon. But because of the world and its current state, that did not happen like every other convention and expo. So we'd actually be in our winding down phase, catching up on orders if there were any. Because usually what I have to do before, about a month and a half before the doll convention, is I halt all incoming orders. So I don't take on any new jobs or anything like that, just so I can process what we currently have and build stock for the show. So under normal circumstances, I'd be basically reopening, catching up on that. But right now, I'm just kind of, holding pattern, doing jobs here and there, trying to get some of my own personal projects that have been on the back burner forever done.
What kind of things are those? If you want to talk about them, you don't
have to. Trying to get my doll finalized. I mean, I have the little doll, which, like I said, she herself is not a prototype, but she was originally a prototype, so she does not have the current jointing system that the full-scale doll would have. So a lot of it has to do with, I don't have time, haven't had time to put it on the printer. I want to get her done and built before next year. I actually have her, I have her older prototype this is the size that she'll be printed at.
Oh, cool.
So this.
And is that quarter?
This was. Yeah, she's about a quarter scale. So this was the prototype scale just to do joint tests, so I didn't waste a ton of resin. And then this was the full scale. But I've gone through and changed. She's got, right now, her leg joint is just right here for the thigh. Her new one has a part cut here so that she can turn without turning the ball. I redid the knee joints and the elbow joints, and I redid a couple of the other things. But I just haven't had. I haven't had time or opportunity to really,
Print. I mean, you're running a business, so, and doing homeschool and everything else.
And every time I'm like, oh, I can print her today, nope, something comes up, or the machine decides to, you know, be the machine and do what it wants, and, but, yeah, mostly just trucking along, doing odd jobs here and there with the printing, getting my own projects finished and finalized, building a chicken coop at some point.
That's fun. Do you already have chickens?
Yeah, we have chickens. We just, right now we have chickens and quail, and they're in the same coop, and we're separating them because we want to increase our quail flock. So we're going to give the chickens their own coop. So we can just leave the quail in the one they're in.
Lovely. That's fun.
So, yeah, that's... My husband decides to do these weird things. Like, he just decided we were going to get quail and chicken one day, and now we have quail and chicken.
They're very cute, though. One of my friends had quails growing up, and they're just the sweetest little things. Like, so
they are. They're adorable. We actually have a brood of babies right now that hatched a week ago that are in, they're tiny, and they're fluffy, and they're adorable. They're also very dumb.
I mean, they're kind of like chickens, right? Not the most brains going on.
No.
But they're sweet.
They really are. But it's basically, it's managing all the other craziness that's going on in the world, like everybody else is, dealing with homeschool, distance learning, not really homeschool, but it is homeschool, but
use the right words.
I mean, it's effectively homeschool, but distance learning with a 5-year-old when your school system is changing daily, it's chaos. It's controlled chaos. So, and then trying to run a business on top of all that.
I can't even imagine what that's like. My god. I just, every time I think about children, I really sit there and think about what it would be like to have a kid. I'm like, how does anyone do it? Like, anyone. It's just all of your time.
It's a juggling.
It's crazy.
It's the juggling act for sure. But it's fun. No, the printing is kind of, it is a job. It is a business for me, but it's still at the core. It's a hobby. So I do enjoy it. I love what I get to do. I love printing stuff for other people because it lets me print things that I probably wouldn't have printed to begin with. It's fun, yeah.
It's good. It's good to have something to come back to. Was there anything else you wanted to chat about? Or, I don't know. Were there any other topics you wanted to cover?
I mean, we covered the resin. That's been the main thing that I know people have kind of been trying to get out of me is the glitter resin.
Yeah, I mean... No. I hope I didn't put you on the spot, but I do love it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then where can people find you?
On everywhere except for Twitter, I am Synthetic Ephemera. It's also syntheticephemera.com for my website. And then on Twitter, I am Mirror ADA. And that's just because they won't let me change my base name. Like, I can change my nickname, but I can't change my at, and I don't feel like starting a new account.
Fair. So. Well, we'll drop all those links. We'll drop all the links in there, so people can spell them and everything. Awesome. Oh, wow. Well, this was great. I feel excited. I haven't unpacked my resin printer from when I moved recently, and now I just feel really inspired too. So thank you so much for coming to chat with me and sharing all your amazing wisdoms and skills. This has been, it's been really fun.
Glitter keycap.
Yes.
Glitter keycap.
Yes. I think that's, I kind of did it for my second go on the embroidery ones, which are, anyway, I kind of did it.
Because they're
already oriented.
In a way that would...
They would be, except I tilted them. So there's this specific way you can orient keycaps and anything really to like maximize the voxel resolution. It's a matsy thing, but basically there's certain angles for different printers. And I did that with the keycaps. So they're like tilted on the side. So you have to like look at them like this to
I should have known
before I hit print, but I didn't. And so they don't look like they're glittery at all until you're like, oh, wow, there's really glittery.
Like, oh, there it is. Yeah.
So I do. I need to play with the orientation much more. But yeah, glitter keycaps.
But yeah, they would. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I would rock a set of those. That's another one of those things like, why haven't I done this yet?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Mechanical keyboards. I'm not really into the keyboard part, but the keycaps, I just like.
Keycaps, yeah.
I'm so into that. So, and people, yeah, it's really funny because every now and again, people are like, what keyboard should I buy? I'm like, I don't know. What switches should I buy? I don't know. I'm only in the keycaps. Yeah, like, I do this hobby wrong.
It fits the one I have, and beyond that, I don't know.
But yeah, I love tiny things. I think that's the thing that, like, why I go on the dull Google trains every now and again, because it's just, they're so cool when you're little.
Yeah.
Something about it. Yeah. Oh, but yes, thank you so, so much for hanging out with me. This
thank you for, I know the timing, especially with trying to get all three of us on here was definitely an issue, so.
We'll have to send love to Faye. We love you, Faye.
Yes. Mwah, yes. Mwah. One day we will all meet up and.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Hug for real.
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'll see you on the internet.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Awesome.
All right. Yeah.
Bye. Okay.
Bye.
I will stop recording. Yes.